Introduce yourself, please.
Oh, hi. I'm Judy Morgan. I'm state representative for the 24th District in the House of Representatives. It is the Midtown, Downtown, and West Side part of Kansas City.
Excellent. Let's play the open.
This is State House Blend. I'm Sam Zeff.
And I'm Brian Ellison. We're using coffee
and donuts
to better understand the legislatures on both sides of the state line.
The issues and the people in Topeka.
And Jeff City. Here we go. And welcome to the very first Missouri edition of State House Blend. We're very excited about this. We've been focusing on what's going on in Topeka for, six or seven months now. And now we have an opportunity to realize that there's some things going on in Jefferson City, too. So I want to thank Judy Morgan for being our very first Missouri State Representative.
Thank you for inviting me. I feel flattered.
Well, we're really glad you're here. And joining us today to share in the conversation are at least one of your constituents, Eric Bunch. He's the Director of Education and co-founder of Bike Walk KC. Welcome to you, Eric.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I'm glad you're here. And also my good KCUR friend and colleague, Gina Kaufman. Welcome, Gina.
Hi, Brian.
It's good to have you here. So the first thing we always do, Judy, is ask you to tell us about your kids and your pets.
Oh, well, I have both.
Okay.
I have a kid and I have two pets.
All right. What are their names?
My pets are two little miniature dachshunds. They are Leo and Dylan. My daughter's Courtney. Her husband is Roby. And I have a grandson, Alex, who is 2.5.
It's interesting you went with the pets first and then the kids. But
I guess they're living with me now and she doesn't.
That's fair. And we also like to ask how you got involved in politics in the first place.
Well, I've really been interested in it since I was a little girl and John F. Kennedy ran for president. And then I was very active in my union, and I became union president of the teachers union in Kansas City. And I really never thought I would run for elected office, but I did a lot of campaigning over the years, kind of the grunt work for at all levels, really, city, state, national, and knocking doors, making phone calls. And when Jane Peters Baker resigned, who was the state rep in my district, she became prosecutor for our Jackson County. There was an opening, and actually two of my friends, really good friends, who are my union sisters, asked me to run. And I really hadn't thought about it myself, but they say that's a lot of times how women get involved. And yeah. I did have a lot of background and had worked quite a bit in politics. So it was a pretty easy transition to do it.
That's really interesting. A lot of the folks we've had on this show from the Kansas side, and I think maybe more women than men, have said it was filling in a vacancy was mm-hmm. how they first got involved.
Yeah. They say women a lot of times don't initiate. They don't have the confidence, and they just don't think that they're, you know, that they could do the job. And whereas men are much more confident usually. So women, it's when somebody that they really respect asks them to run, then they kind of say, well, if these people think I can do it, then I can do it.
Very interesting. Well, today we have a lot to talk about. We're going to talk about issues that the legislature dealt with in the session that ended a couple months ago. We'll talk about the state house atmosphere and some of the goings on in Jeff City, which we can't.
I thought you might ask me about that.
Yeah, I can't really avoid that topic. But
right.
But first, we're going to go around the table and see what our guests want to talk about. So Eric Bunch of Bike Walk KC.
Sure. I believe I'm your citizen representative here
you
today
are.
And happen to be a constituent within your district.
Very happy to have you.
Yeah. Happy to have you representing us. I think my question, I'm also here sort of as a professional transportation, particularly active transportation advocate. So transportation policy is something that's very near and dear to my heart, which sounds kind of odd that something as wonky as transportation policy would be interesting. Mm-hmm. But I guess I'm interested to hear your take on the situation that MoDOT has, I guess, maybe found itself in. Essentially paying for transportation costs with bond issuances for mm-hmm. the past several years. And now that money has run out, we're in a pretty dire situation of not having any money. And mm-hmm. so we put a sales tax on the ballot and that failed. There's seemingly no appetite for tolling any of our highways. There was an attempt to raise the fuel tax a little bit, and that failed. Mm-hmm. And so, I guess maybe what's next? How do we move forward
sure.
to maintain the 34,000 miles of
right.
MoDOT highways that we have?
You're exactly right, and you're probably aware, Eric, that the highway program is a lot funded by federal funds, but the state has to put up so much matching money, and we have to put up, I believe, $1 for every $4 we get back from the feds. Yep. And the situation we find ourselves in is we may not be able to put up our $1 share, and which means we would also lose the federal funds, which would be drastic, as you well know. So that's the situation we're finding ourselves in. It's really tough. I read a study by the Missouri Budget Project, which I really have a lot of respect for them. They do really good work. And they said that the two solutions they thought were the most would be the most effective would be the toll road tax. And then the second one would be raising some of the motor vehicle fees, which haven't been raised in a long time. You know, when you go to get your license or when you you register your vehicle, you pay a fee. So those are some of the things we're going to look at. I don't know. I think it might be possible that some kind of small gas tax increase would come back. The legislature has a lot of restrictions on how much we can actually pass taxes
because of the
Hancock without going to a vote of the people. So we are in a situation where it was called 2x2x2, which was 2 cents for each year for the next 3 years, which would have just given us enough to probably keep our highway funds. But that's all the legislature can raise without a vote of the people.
And what would the toll road be that would raise a toll road tax?
Well, I don't really know exactly what it would be. You know, it would likely be all along. The recommendation would be all along I-70.
Make it Missouri Turnpike.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And I guess people who support that thinks that makes some sense because, you know, we have a lot of big truckers driving through here that are not from Missouri. They use our roads, and they do a lot of the damage to our roads. So this would be a way for them to kind of help pay their fair share. Of course, I think the trucking industry is probably going to be against it. So, yeah, it's a bad situation. The sales tax, I did vote to put it on the ballot. It was a tough choice for me because kind of my labor union friends and my social justice friends were on two sides of that issue, and I love both of those groups. The labor union folks wanted it for jobs. The social justice people were against it because it's an unfair, regressive tax. Mm-hmm. I agreed with both of them. I ended up voting for it ultimately, and of course then, as you know, it failed by 59-41%.
Right, wasn't even close.
Right.
Gina Kaufman?
Yeah, I'm just curious. I mean, it seems like a lot of how you are thinking about this issue has to do with your affiliations with different groups and mm-hmm. issues, but I'm curious how you think about transportation and infrastructure as a user of Missouri infrastructure within Kansas City and within the heart of Kansas City. Like, does your personal experience ever create some nuance or complication in how you view those issues?
I don't know. That's a good question. Of course, I obviously use the roads myself personally. I take I-70 back and forth to Jeff City January through May. I can certainly see just from taking that highway myself that it needs work. I mean, it's not a brain scientist to figure that out, that there's problems. I think it was built, in 1965, I believe. That's how old that highway is. So, yeah, I think any politician, you kind of combine your own personal what happens in your personal life. But then I think you really do have to look to your constituents even more than your own personal experiences and listen to them and what they want. You do run on certain issues. I think I ran on some issues that, you know, I'm not going to change on those issues. But I say that up front. You know, this is what I believe in. And if you vote for me, then that's what I'm going to be doing. And if you don't like it, then you're probably going to want to vote against me.
You know, and of course, nobody voted against you. One of the things that is is true is that you ran unopposed in the last election.
Yes, that's true.
In either the primary or the general. Didn't have a Republican opponent.
That's true. I was kind of surprised.
Well, maybe the reason is that 2 years before that, you were elected with 83% of the vote.
Yes.
Pretty safe seat. Does that change how you work as a legislator when really you're going to be in that role for as long as term limits allow and you want to keep serving?
Well, I don't think it would change for me. I kind of come from I just sort of like to work hard. I mean, that's just me. I did it as a teacher. I did it as union president. And I think if you take this job, you ought to be willing to work hard and stay in touch with your constituents. And so, you know, I think I work hard so that I can keep the job, obviously.
Yeah.
And I don't really think I take it for granted because even when I was unopposed, I did go out and knock doors last summer in 2014. I sent out campaign literature, probably not as much, you know, because it's kind of probably not a good idea to spend a lot of money when you're unopposed. But I don't think it changes me.
Yeah, Gina mentioned the kind of the personal backgrounds and affiliations, and you've mentioned now twice you were president of the teachers union.
Yes.
Let's talk a little bit about education in Missouri right now. It's one of the main functions of a state budget is education. It's your big issue. How's Missouri doing?
Well, I don't think Missouri is doing as well as I would like it to do, obviously. We are not fully funding our foundation formula. Haven't done it since, I think, 2008 or 2009. You know, the teachers are not very well paid in the state of Missouri. And I think I would like to see us have universal early childhood in Missouri. I think that's really important. But obviously, if we're not even fully funding K through 12, how are we going to find the money to do universal pre-K, you know, universal early childhood education? So, yeah, I don't think we're doing as well as I would like to see us do in Missouri.
So, Gina, what you?
Yeah, well, about education, I guess. Within Kansas City, the public schools are just a huge issue for a lot of people who live in your district. And there is a perception among a lot of people that if you want a good public school education for your kids, you either have to move to Kansas, send your kids to private school, or get into the charter schools. And I'm wondering, as someone with teaching experience, how accurate you think that perception is, and how much of it is self-fulfilling prophecy? How much of it is education funding? What's going on?
Well, and I think there's a lot of good schools in the Kansas City public schools. And my daughter is almost 35 now, but we sent her to the Kansas City public schools. I worked, lived in the district, and sent my daughter to the schools. And she got a really good education. She graduated valedictorian from Paseo, and she's now got a PhD in marriage and family counseling. So I think a lot of the schools do a good job. I think, and somebody told this to me very early in my teaching career. She was a fellow teacher, and her son was in the district. She said, "Judy, as a parent, you have to be involved. You've got to go up to the school. You've got to talk to the teachers." And it's the combination, I think, of the parent and the school working together. And I think we do have schools where that happens, and I think those schools are doing a pretty good job.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Eric, you look like you want to say something.
Yeah, I'm a parent of a 2-year-old. He's not quite ready for school yet, but it's coming around the corner. And so, you know, the comment that Gina made is resonates with me, because that's something that we often hear as young parents, that, you know, the question is always, well, you live in Kansas City. What are you going to do about school?
What are you going to do?
It's always shocking when we say, "Well, we don't know. We're going to figure it out." Mm-hmm. But there is going to be a reality at some point. You know, what do we do? And do we try to work with the public school? Do we jump on board with one of the charter schools? Maybe my question is, as someone who's not, this is a question for you as a parent of a person who's sent their kids to the Kansas City Public School, and less about you as my representative in Jefferson City. But what advice would you give to a young parent who's sort of struggling with that?
I think I would go visit schools. You know, actually go yourself and visit the schools. I think I would talk to other parents who sent their kids to that school. And schools should be open to letting you come in, whether it's a, you know, KC public school or a charter school. And there really is quite a bit of choice in Kansas City in terms of schools. And, you know, there are obviously we've gone a lot more to neighborhood schools than we were when my daughter was in school, because it was during the DSEG magnet day. So there was, you know, kids could, you know, apply for a lot of different schools. But there still are, like, there's the Montessori program in Kansas City, Border Star and Holiday are two of those schools. I think they do a great job. So I think as a parent, I would just go out there and visit schools, and I would talk to other parents who have their kids. And I think that'll give you a good feel for that particular school by doing that.
Absolutely. Okay,
but I don't want to let you off the hook as a state representative on this question.
Oh, I was going to circle back and do that, too.
So, I mean, is there something that you and your colleagues in the Missouri General Assembly can actually do about this? Or do you have to say, well, that's the school board in Kansas City, that's the state education department? Can you fix this in any way?
Well, I don't know that any one person can fix schools. I mean, I do think it's a collaborative effort. I strongly believe that, that it's got to be the parents, the teachers, the administration.
So what's community. Your part in the collaboration?
Well, I think my part is, for one thing, to try to make sure the schools are funded, to try to get as much funding as we can, and to make sure that schools are accountable, that there, we do have accountability standards. I think the Kansas City School District is on the preparatory, you know, is hopefully going to get full accreditation. They have provisional now, and they're working hard to get full. So I think we need to make sure those accountability standards are in place, which I believe they are, and that the schools are judged fairly. And I think maybe another thing we need to do is try to figure out a way to bring early childhood to our state as a universal program. It's not going to be easy because of the funding, but that early childhood, I think, is the best hope we have to get all kids off to a good start in school.
Okay. Gina, you want to jump in again?
Yeah, I'm just on education curious about whether you know about this guy Spainhower. Is that a name that rings a bell?
No.
In the late 1960s or early 1970s, I'm kind of hazy on this at this moment, so forgive
okay,
me, but
sure.
A guy named with the last name of Spainhower okay. was hired by the Missouri governor. He was tasked with coming up with a solution to problems in education at that time. And he put forward a proposal after forming a commission and studying this for over a long period of time that in the major metropolitan areas in Missouri, so Kansas City and St. Louis, that each of those cities should have just one school district, including all the suburbs, which in Kansas City is complicated because there's a state line running through
right.
it. But he received just vitriolic hate mail, mostly from suburban residents in both of those cities, that was overtly racist. And I wonder, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, there was an editorial all about that what we need to do is go back to Spainhower's solution. And I wonder what you think about that.
Consolidating, incorporating the suburban school districts into one
right.
metro area school
yeah,
district.
Yeah, so that better funded tax bases are also supporting sort of depopulated areas
right.
or
right.
disinvested
right.
areas.
Right, right. And I believe maybe Memphis may have done something like this. Does that ring a bell to you guys? It seems like I read that they might have. I actually think it, in terms of funding, it's probably a good idea for the reason you said, because it would level out the playing field. Kansas City, you know, we had a very, very low property tax levy, which the judge increased back in the 80s. And it would put us on a better standing. But since then, a lot of the other districts have raised their levies above Kansas City. But I think from a political point of view, it would be very difficult to do for the very reason that you said.
Because, so, I mean, politically, the reasons why it would be hard, do you think they would be the same reasons as they were in the late 60s,
yes.
early 70s?
Yes, I do. I do believe that. It's really interesting. You even look like it, say, some of the education reform issues that we're dealing with in Jefferson City. As long as charter schools were just in Kansas City or St. Louis, everybody was okay with that. But then when this bill came forward, the transfer bill this past year that would have put charter schools in a lot more districts, well, all of a sudden, those suburban districts, they didn't want charter schools in their district. They'd vote for it to be in Kansas City and St. Louis, but they don't want it in their neck of the woods. So I think you would still have some, or maybe a lot, of hatred, like you said, all the things you said. I don't think that has changed that much. I mean, Kansas
right.
City is still a pretty racially segregated city overall. It really is.
It would take some pretty, I think courageous might be the word, actions by
right.
the legislature to,
right.
to try to pull something like that off.
Right.
It would be opposed by a lot of the suburban districts.
And I would guess most of the suburban legislators, again, reacting to their own constituents, it would be a difficult spot for them to
tough
be
sell.
In.
Mm-hmm. We need to move on to something besides education, although okay. I know that's a passion of yours. And I think you're probably trying to delay this particular topic that I want to talk about next, because it's not been the easiest month for press okay. coverage for the for state legislators. A lot of the reporting over the last month, including from the Kansas City Star and KCUR Steve Kraske, has been about the culture mm-hmm. in the Missouri State House, particularly one involving a lot of sexual harassment, particularly of interns, of young women interns,
right.
but of other women who work at the legislature in some of the accounts. I guess I want to start with you as a woman who, obviously, as a representative, you're in a somewhat different situation mm-hmm. than some of the
right.
other women in Jeff City. But what have you seen? Did the things that you read about in these reports match up with what you've witnessed?
Well, I think it's unfortunate that none of the young women who have been have come forward with the sexual harassment charges against several senators, or senator and a representative rather, did not feel comfortable enough coming to any of us. Mm. You know, they really didn't. I mean, because I don't think any, you know, I'm a woman elected official. Nobody came to me. I don't think they came to any of the other male elected officials. And
they,
that,
they said they were afraid for their jobs, afraid for their future ability to get jobs.
Right. And I think we've just got to change that. I mean, if something like that, I mean, I have no regard for that kind of stuff going on. I mean, these are kids. You know, they are young people. They are there because they want to learn about the government. They want to learn about the legislature. And they should feel they should never be harassed or mistreated in any way, shape, or form. And they should feel comfortable coming forward and telling some of us. And I'm hoping we can change that. I know Claire McCaskill is working on figuring out some kind of mechanism or process that we can put in place so that if this happens again, that these young people will feel like they have somebody they can come talk to about it and that we can stop it. I also hope maybe all of this coming out public, maybe some of these people will get some sense and stop doing this stuff.
I mean, the reports talked about a whole culture, though. Maybe the fact that Jefferson City is sort of isolated, that it's far away from people's home constituencies. Were you surprised by it, or do you recognize this sort of wild west
no,
picture?
I think there was a lot of truth to those reports. I I'm of grandmotherly age, so I don't get involved in that kind of stuff. You know, I don't go out drinking at night. I go back to where I live and I work on bills and research. And there's a lot of other people that do that, too. You know, I'm not the only one that actually, I think, you know, sets a standard of acting right when you're up there and doing your job. But yes, I've heard about stuff, you know, over the years, for many years, that, you know, drinking and partying and that kind of stuff does go on. I actually think in some ways it probably was even worse in the 80s and 90s. That's not to minimize what happened this time because it was wrong. But I'm really hopeful that we can change this. Our new speaker, Todd Richardson, actually has set up a committee that has already started meeting to try to figure out some way to deal with this intern situation so that we don't have anything like this again ever happen.
Eric Bunch, you're our citizen representative. You're not a jaded journalist like Gina Kaufman.
That's what people always say about
Gina
me.
Gina doesn't seem very jaded to me.
So when you, as a citizen, wide-eyed and just concerned about good government, when you hear these things, what goes through your head?
I think shock, but not shock. I'm not surprised, and I think that is as a resident, as a constituent, I find that to be embarrassing, and it's hard when something like that makes national attention, as it sometimes does, to go to another place, and I travel a little bit every year and work with my colleagues in other states. And for some of these things to come to light nationally is for me to have to sort of say, well, no, Missouri's not really that bad. We're not all bad people, crazy. Not all of our state legislatures, mm-hmm. all of our politicians aren't bad people, but there's a handful of them
right.
who just make it look really, really bad.
No, and I think you're accurate, Eric. I think there's a lot of people who go down there and do the right thing in terms of their behavior.
I'm sure
I may disagree totally with them on policy, but they don't go around sexting with kids or sexually harassing people or getting drunk at night and that kind of thing. And I'd say probably most people, you know, are well behaved down there. But like you say, there's a handful who are not, and it's one is too many.
And I guess the bigger issue is just the culture of the culture that we've built that gives particularly men in positions of power like that the free rein to behave in such a way, I think, is maybe the worst, the thing that bothers me the most, is that we've developed a culture that mm-hmm. allows that basically condones men behaving that way. And I think that this is where my feminism kind of comes out. And so I think that's really, really troubling. And as a man, I find that to be really, really embarrassing.
I guess as a woman who has worked in a number of different kinds of workplaces, I think that the way gender affects the dynamics of a workplace. I mean, I've seen that play out in a lot of different ways, mm-hmm. and a number of them less maybe progressively than you would think in the 21st century. And so I'd like to just restate that I've worked in a lot of places, and I'm not talking about KCUR right now.
Okay.
Thank you for that disclaimer.
I'm curious how much of this you think is about Jeff City and how much of this you think is about our culture, and what is the role of government in setting an example culturally?
Is it really worse in Jeff City than it is anywhere else?
Yeah, do we hold Jeff City, and should we hold Jeff City to a higher standard?
Right.
Well, I think as legislators, we need to be held to high standards of behavior. And, you know, I do believe that, you know, we should do our jobs, work hard, do the right thing. And it's inexcusable when we don't do it. I think it's a combination. You asked about, is it because Jeff City is like kind of in a more isolated place? I think that does have something to do with it. And I think the whole culture of the country, too. I think it's a combination. I don't think you can just hone it down to one thing. But one other aspect of it that we haven't talked about that I think I and some other women were affected by is kind of the way we're treated on the floor of the House when we try to get up to speak on issues. And I was oftentimes ignored, was not called, and I wasn't the only one. There were other women who were not called on to speak. And in the House, we have a situation where debate can be closed with just a majority of the vote, and it's closed all the time on us. And so we would be, I experienced times when I stood on the floor for 2.5 hours trying to speak on a particular bill that my constituents cared about, that I cared about, and that's why I'm sent down there, is to be their voice, and yet I was not called upon. And like I said, it wasn't just me, it was other women, and it tended to be primarily the progressive women that were not called upon. Now, there were also, I have to say, there were also some of the Democratic men who were not called on, but I do think it tended to be more the progressive women. And there's about 7 of us down there, and we were the ones who were oftentimes not called upon to speak. And I see that as kind of another dimension of the culture down there.
Yeah. That seems like a really big deal.
Yeah, it is a big deal. And I'm hoping with our new speaker that may change some. I think the speaker deal was, I think I've had 3 speakers since I've been down there. I thought he was the worst.
Speaker deal is one of the representatives who's resigned.
Yes, the
because
one
of his
he was the worst at ignoring the progressive women, in my opinion, and, you know, having debate closed on us so that we could not speak about things we cared about.
I want to ask you about one other governance issue while we're talking about that in Jeff City, and then we'll go around the table one last time for one more question from our guests. But I want to talk about ethics and about the gifts policy in Missouri, which Missouri is now well known for having one of the loosest policies with regard to ethics and really no limitations on gifts. But gifts do have to be reported.
Right.
And there was a report that came out about the first 3 months of 2015, 33 state officials had received no gifts, reported receiving no gifts, and then there was a list of what each mm-hmm. other representative received. You were the representative who reported, of those receiving gifts, you reported the smallest mm-hmm. amount of gifts. It was $5.40 in mm-hmm. gifts in the first 3 months mm-hmm. of the year. Judy Morgan, I am here to ask you, what did you receive worth $5.40 in the first 3 months of this year?
I actually think I went to a presentation on some policy we were discussing, and whoever was there had a box lunch, and I think I took one.
A $5.40 box lunch.
I
now
think
we
that's
know.
What it was. Yeah.
I was predicting it was 2 lattes, but
no,
but it was,
no, it was.
Okay.
I think it was a box lunch, and I went to the. It was a good program. I wanted to go and find out information, you know. But
how was the lunch?
You know, I don't remember. I really don't.
It's pretty inexpensive. It's a good price for a lunch.
Yeah,
really.
It's
yeah.
a really good deal.
Yeah.
I'm here to report that Judy has not taken any donuts.
That's true. The donuts are sitting right here. In fact,
that's
Judy,
only because I exercised this morning. I love donuts.
Judy,
trying to be good.
Would you mind getting me some coffee there? You're
sure,
closer than
sure,
I am.
Sure.
I appreciate that. So, okay, there. I appreciate that. Now, here's the question I guess I have about this gift thing. You dutifully reported your $5.40.
Well, actually, I don't report it. The lobbyists.
Okay, the lobbyists report it.
The lobbyists are required by law to report however much they've spent on people each month.
There were some others on that list who received a couple thousand dollars of gifts in that same period of time. Is the system broken with regard to gifts and ethics?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. I definitely think so. I think it's horrible. I think there should be severe limits on gifts, if any. I mean, I'd be willing to live with zero, you know, but some people have suggested maybe we put a limit of no more than $25 in on any particular thing, no more than $25
so your box
per
lunch
day.
Is, the box lunch is safe, but not much else.
Yeah, right. And so maybe somebody will take you out for, I mean, Jeff City is a pretty cheap place to eat. I don't know if you've been there, but you get food pretty inexpensively down there. So you can get a decent meal for $25 in Jeff City. I also think we need campaign contribution limits because we have none of those either. And we also have no restrictions on when people can leave the legislature and become lobbyists. So I can be a state rep today and a lobbyist tomorrow. And that's actually has happened in some cases. So I think those are the three areas we need in ethics reform, stopping the revolving door, limits on campaign contributions, and limits on lobbyist gifts. We actually did have a decent bill in the House that dealt with the lobbyists and the lobbyist gifts and the revolving door. It did not deal with campaign contribution limits, but it ended up going nowhere, even though it left out the I don't think the Republicans will ever agree to campaign contribution limits because it's to their advantage not to.
Right. We'll ask some of your colleagues, Republican and Democratic, in coming weeks here on the State House Blend about that. Before we go, though, I want to give my guests one more chance to ask Representative Judy Morgan a question.
Okay, time's gone very fast.
It has. Eric Bunch?
So I'm gonna do a bad move, and I'm gonna go back to transportation
because
that's what I'm most familiar with policy wise. One of the challenges that I perceive is that over the last, you look at the history of MoDOT spending and MoDOT revenue, and we have spent far more than we've been taking in, far more than we've been taking in. So it's
because
not
of the bonding
because we propped it up with a bond for several years, and now that bond is gone.
You're right.
It's not even as much of as far as I see, it's not as much of a revenue issue, a lack of revenue. It really is an issue of massive spending. And so one thing that I'm concerned about is if we do raise this some sort of tax or tolling or whatever, are we going to continue to just build and build and build and build and create more financial liabilities in the future? Because that's essentially what we've done with building more lanes on I-64 through St. Louis for no actual true benefit. Do you perceive, and I'm kind of letting my bias here, I'm not letting it. It surely is showing. But do you perceive that is a challenge, that we have to kind of cut back on the spending as well in transportation funding?
Well, at this point, I think we're in a bind. I mean, so much like in that Missouri budget project, they talk about how much like just a bag of cement has increased in cost. I mean, so we've kind of, even though we may have done projects, we're having to pay more for the projects just because the goods that go into those projects cost a lot of money. So I'm not sure that I think they've overspent, you know, tons and tons over the years. You are right about the bonding. We've taken out some bonds. We've actually done projects, and we're going to take, I think, till 2030 or something like that to pay those bonds off, and yet none of that money is going into anything new. It's just going toward paying off what we've already done. Again, it's good stewardship in government. If we can get something in place to fund the highways, then we need to be responsible for overseeing that and make sure those dollars are spent wisely. If there's a tax increase, it can be tied to, on the ballot, it can be tied to specific things. Now, sometimes, as you probably know, the legislature has unfortunately overturned the will of the people on a couple of things throughout the year. So it's not totally binding, but probably any kind of revenue that you try to generate, we should say this is what it's going to go for.
All right. And Gina Kaufman.
I'm so torn between asking you a personal question and a political question, but I'm going to ask a political one.
Okay, I'll take either one.
We'll ask one more personal one after
okay.
you're
okay.
done.
Okay, oh,
I guess, you know, in the last year in the Missouri legislature, what people call Ferguson-related bills have gotten, I mean, I guess I hesitate to say a lot of attention, but there's been some talk about the lack of action on some things that seem like, you know, that there has been maybe a call for action for just socially out in the world. And I'm curious how you see, first of all, the labeling of things as Ferguson-related bills, because I understand that a lot of those bills were actually put forth before anything had even happened in Ferguson. But
like body cameras for police officers. Yeah, that's correct.
I'm curious how what you've been witnessing in Jefferson City as far as talk both about Ferguson and about race issues in Missouri.
Well, I think that there are definitely, and obviously all those individuals who represent Ferguson and areas around Ferguson, the legislators, a lot of them did put forth bills from anywhere from, you know, the police body cameras to the, you know, limiting the fines to, you know, a number of issues that were spearheaded by what happened in Ferguson. But there again, the former speaker made it clear in his speech at the very beginning of the session, we were not going to be making this a Ferguson, you know, legislative session. So he made it pretty clear the Republicans were not going to pass some of those bills. So I think they still need to be worked on, and I believe that those bills will be filed again. And hopefully at some point, I think the police body cameras, some of the concerns with that has to do with funding again. I'm not sure that a lot of people are against that. But they've got to figure out how to fund them. You can't. It's you know, police departments don't want an unfunded mandate, basically, because it would fall on them. So we have to figure out some way to fund them. But yeah, I think it's certainly still an issue. I don't necessarily think we dealt with the race issues at all in Jeff City.
Appreciate those answers and those questions. For my guests today are our celebrity journalist guest, the host of KCUR Central Standard, Gina Kaufman. Thanks for being here, Gina.
I'm smirking at the idea of celebrity, but you're welcome.
Well, and celebrity journalist, it's a totally bad concept anyway. And Eric Bunch, who is a policy director with Bike Walk KC. Well, thank you for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
And State Representative Judy Morgan, who is a Democrat representing Kansas City. Thank you, Judy. And in an effort to get to know you just a little better, in a State House Blend tradition, we need to know what your favorite song is, and we will go out listening to your favorite song.
Oh, my gosh. I am so bad with the song titles.
Any song from any time in your life.
I may draw a blank. I wish my husband were here because he knows all. Blowing in the Wind.
Blowing in the Wind. That is a very respectable choice.
That is it took me a while to come up with a name.
Our inaugural Missouri State House Blend will end with Blowin' in the Wind. Thank you, Judy. Good to have you here.
Thank you. I appreciated being here.
State House Blend. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say good to talk to both of
good
you.
Good to talk to you, too.
Yeah,
you.
Absolutely.
State House Blend is produced by Matt Hodapp. You can find us on iTunes or on kcur.org/statehouseblend. Hey, if you're on Twitter, you can follow me. I'm at PTSBrian. You can also look for the hashtag State House Blend. I'm Brian Ellison. See you next time. The answer is blowing in the wind.